The House will come to order if members can take their seats.
This budget is a huge job maker, and the number one solution to economic insecurity is a job.
Hungry children can't learn, and it's our responsibility to try to help.
Equality and opportunity.
I believe most people are here because they want to do some good.
Welcome to Capital Ideas. We've got a good long conversation today with newly appointed Representative Janice Zahn from the 41st. It's a big, diverse district that includes Mercer Island on the west and stretches east to Lake Sammamish and beyond. Janice Zahn became Representative Zahn on day 10 of the current session when she was tapped to fill an empty seat, and this is her first time to sit down in the Capital Ideas studio. Before I cut to the conversation, I'll mention that Capital Ideas is the podcast where members of the majority House Democratic Caucus sit down at the Capitol here in Olympia, Washington, at the southern reach of Puget Sound, and talk about ideas. We recorded this on Wednesday, April 2nd, 2025, and here's what we said. Welcome to Capital Ideas, Representative Janice Zahn. It's a treat to have you here for the very first time. Thanks for coming by.
I'm glad to be here.
Let me begin by getting you to talk a little bit about yourself and your district.
Happy to do that. You know, I would say that I'm someone who spent a lot of my time in government. So I started in the private sector, started out after college working for the Weyerhaeuser Company in research and development. And then when I got my master's in structural engineering, I was in design for a number of years. And I do have to say that I have found that it's been really nostalgic in the Transportation Committee to be able to think about some of the projects I worked on related to transportation. So sharing with some of my colleagues the 705 project, where right next to the Cable Stayed Bridge is an elevated urban interchange that I worked on as a structural engineer. And so I feel like although I wasn't someone that thought I would be an elected official, somehow I was led there maybe by my interest in a lot of really eclectic things that seemingly come together when you think about the fact that government is about system within systems. As an engineer, I worked on a lot of problem solving, and then I started to lean into public policy. So got my degree from the Evans School at the University of Washington. And still at that time, the only electeds that I was even aware of were the elected commissioners at the Port of Seattle. And yet, in 2017, I thought, you know, instead of waiting around for others to step up and work on improving government, why couldn't it be me? So why not? Yeah. Just finished serving almost 7.5 years on the Bellevue City Council, which in its own way was very satisfying in local government to help the community. And yet here in the legislature is an opportunity to look at it in a much more holistic way than even in local government, right? We up in Olympia are looking at also how healthcare affects our whole system, how we look at our criminal justice system, how we look at education and our schools, and all of the pieces that go into making sure that the government and the systems really work for the very people we're trying to serve. So I am really excited to be here. And I would say after dropping into Olympia on day 10 as an appointee and two plus months in, I am still really excited about the opportunity to make a difference and make sure government works better for people.
You sound pretty enthusiastic. I talk to a lot of new members, as I mentioned, and I would say it's about equally divided between people who very early in the session were still trying to figure out where the restrooms were and other people who are just so excited to be a part of what's going on here, which, as you said, it affects everything really in the state.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the other part I haven't shared yet is that before coming to Olympia, I was actually involved in the Capital Project Advisory Review Board and the Project Review Committee, where many of the projects from around the state, we approve these projects for alternative delivery, and we also advise the legislature in alternative public contracting. So I already had some experience with coming and testifying in front of legislators, and then also representing the city of Bellevue. So it feels natural to lean into that even more. And so maybe that's why, for me, I'm still in that excitement phase. I would say the other part of it is that having been at the Port of Seattle overseeing major capital construction, as you can imagine, whenever we're overseeing construction, when you have a hole in the ground and you have an issue, you're bringing your stakeholders together and you're working to solve problems, and things are not easy. So I just found that for me as an engineer, leaning into problem solving is very natural, and the frustrations that can come with it, trying to get people to the table, negotiating for solutions, is a natural part of what I've done as part of my career.
I may have mentioned this in the introduction, but in case I didn't, you're the chief engineer at the Port of Seattle, in addition to being a state lawmaker, correct?
Yes, I've been in that role just about 2.5 years, and then more than 20 years for the Port of Seattle. So that time has also been very much about how we make sure that government works for the people. You know, when I think about the Port of Seattle, I've overseen several billion dollars worth of projects, and the work that we do in government through port authorities, right? We run an airport, a seaport, cruise terminals. So it's about economic development that works for everyone. It's about making sure we're the cleanest, greenest, most energy efficient port, tourism. It's a part of how I show up that I bring when I'm down here, which is that amongst issues that we have, we know that we can find a way forward together.
That's a great attitude to have. Is SeaTac Airport part of the Port of Seattle?
Yes. So the Port of Seattle owns and operates SeaTac Airport, and we have been busily in construction trying to make sure the port is ready for FIFA World Cup next year. You know, it's interesting. There's a story that when I first went to the port as a consultant, I was working this really odd shift. I started at 3 a.m. And so what I was doing was I was bridging the nighttime construction work with the daytime staff and engineers to get solutions to issues that happen at night. We were installing seismic bracing in the baggage level at the airport. And you can imagine we're in the bowels of the airport trying to get stiffener plates installed in a really old building that was built, you know, back in the 50s.
In the middle of the night.
In the middle of the night.
Well, let's talk some now about you being a state lawmaker. I want to have a good legislative nexus for this conversation. You've sponsored many bills this session, particularly, I think, compared to some of your other first-year cohort. Why don't you pick out a couple that you feel a particular connection to or that you feel like are particularly important bills, whether they passed or not, because just because something hasn't made it yet doesn't mean it won't.
Oh, absolutely. Well, why don't I give some context?
Please.
This session, I sponsored 14 bills, of which 6 bills have moved past policy, and then 5 bills passed out of the House. 1 bill currently is in the Senate. It's been pulled from rules, and so any day now, I'm expecting that bill to pass.
Which bill is that?
That is House Bill 1640, related to interstate compacts. And I would say that that bill was one that one of my fellow legislators, my first week here, said, hey, are you looking for any bills? I have one. A simple little bill, yet a very important bill. And what I ended up telling Rep. Ranowski is that this bill is actually very meaningful to me because it is about physicians and physician assistants from other states and the fact that from an oversight standpoint, they should be part of our Uniform Disciplinary Act so that whether they are physician and physician assistants in Washington State or from out of state, they should be guided and regulated by the same organization. The reason it's meaningful to me is because when we came to the States when I was 10 from Hong Kong, my mother was a nurse back home. And when she came to the States, she was not able to practice because her nursing license didn't transfer. So when I thought about this bill, it was meaningful to me as I think about healthcare and making sure that we have found a way for others to be able to serve our community and to do it in the right way. So that bill was very meaningful to me. I would say that there is two bills in particular that I am the most passionate about, because one of the bills, 1967, related to bonding in design build contracts, is very meaningful because as a public owner in the state of Washington, where I've been meeting with other public owners for probably 15 years, we meet once a month. We were in person and now we're all virtual. And this was actually a bill that several local public agencies had talked about wanting to fix for a long time. So in February, I joined the meeting and we were talking about legislative bills. And one of them said to me, "Hey, wait a minute, you're a legislator now. Why don't you run this bill?" So we chatted about getting the language ready and I dropped the bill.
Explain what a public owner is.
Oh, yes, absolutely. So we talk about ourselves as public owners, and that is just public agencies within the state of Washington that are owners of construction contracts.
Such as the Port of Seattle.
Such as the Port of Seattle, the Washington State Department of Transportation, Department of Enterprise Services, higher ed, cities, counties, other port authorities. So there are many, many government agencies that are also public owners when it comes to construction projects.
I've read that bill, believe it or not, and I would be hard-pressed to explain the significance. So I will toss it right back to you and say I know that it has to do with bonding in a certain phase of a design build contract.
Again, always like to start with context. So in the last 5 years, we've had over 100 design build projects amongst different public agencies in Washington state, the total of which is over $12 billion for these projects. Every one of these projects are set up so that a contractor and a designer form a partnership, and then they pursue these projects with government agencies. The way the statute is written, it was silent or it was not cleaned up from the standpoint that construction, performance, and payment bonds are really a way to protect government agencies during the construction phase. The way the statute has been for many years, it includes the cost of design in the requirement for getting those bonds. So we are actually paying for a type of bond that doesn't actually bring us any value, because in design, we have professional liability, error, and omission insurance that we require from those design builders. So that's why I'm excited about this, because when I think about government, there are so many needs. Let's make sure that we don't have statutory requirements that don't actually bring public benefit, but cost the public money. So the other bill I'm super excited about is House Bill 1970, related to the Washington State Department of Transportation, because in having worked with them collaboratively for many years, one of the things that we realize is as the industry pivots, we need to be prepared as well. For many years, the state legislature has told WSDOT that they are using design build as the delivery method for their larger projects. That delivery method means that during the procurement process, when we're trying to pick who we're going to be partners with, they have to give us a guaranteed maximum price. When you do that early on, before you really understand your full scope, schedule, budget, we see a baking in of risk that may or may not happen that costs the state money. We have seen that on the 520 Portage Bay project. We saw that on the Brickyard project up in Bothell. So this bill actually cleans up the language so that we outright give WSDOT the statutory authority to do progressive design build, which the industry has been pivoting to for many years. In fact, of those 100 projects I was telling you about that are design build, I believe 95% of them are progressive design build. So as the industry has pivoted, we need to be doing the same. And so I was really excited to be a sponsor for that, that really helps WSDOT to be better in delivering their projects. Again, saving the public money.
This is such an interesting bill, and here's why. In addition to the details of the bill, this will never become a headline bill. This won't show up on the front page of the Seattle Times, but it is really important to the people of Washington. And that's how so many bills down here really are. People see the tip of the iceberg, and it's generally something that's either titillating or has to do with crime or something else that causes people's blood pressure to go up. But so much of the work that you do is just good, hard work that benefits the taxpayers.
Yeah, it's really good governance. And I would say that for me, having been in the transportation and design and construction industry for over 30 years, this is, I believe, the things that I bring to Olympia that can help my fellow colleagues and us to be able to be better at governance. The other bill that the Senate version is moving, and I was the sponsor in the House for a companion, there are two of them that I want to highlight.
Please.
One is the safe system approach, which when we think about transportation, I'm very much a strong advocate for Vision Zero and making sure that we're always grounded in transportation safety. So that one we're going to be hearing in the Transportation Committee, I believe, tomorrow. So I'm excited about that. And then the other is related to making some changes for our K-12 education to broaden the definition for what is considered discrimination in schools. That is very important because we know that when students feel like they are valued and they belong in schools, actually in society, they're more likely to thrive and learn and grow. So that bill is another one that I was very excited to be a sponsor of a companion and then to see that the Senate version of the bill is moving forward.
In what way does it broaden that distinction?
It includes categories for homelessness. It also separates gender identity, gender expression, because we also know that for our LGBTQ plus community, it can be a really challenging time in schools to make sure that they can be their authentic self and be accepted and not discriminated against.
It would have to be a very difficult time.
Absolutely.
I'm glad to hear that the Senate version of that is moving, and I guess you'll be the point person on making sure that it becomes law. So good luck on that.
Thank you.
In addition to your House bills, which are preceded by HB, you also have sponsored successfully four House resolutions, which are preceded by HR, and then a number that no one except members know. Tell me about your connection with these. I don't know if these are a whole bunch of resolutions that are sitting on a table and members choose one and they choose another, or if it's something that you came up with. For example, you sponsored a resolution to bring attention to the condition of profound autism, and I'm wondering why.
Thank you for asking me this question. Actually, what I learned from one of my port colleagues, and he's also a constituent in my community, is that profound autism is not well understood. And we actually know that there are a number of families that have children, siblings, friends that they know that have profound autism, and the amount of additional support that's needed for folks with profound autism. So what I learned is that for the first time, Profound Autism Day is March 17th. So when I got the email from Andrew, I was proud to work with the comm staff to have a resolution declaring Profound Autism Day and creating that awareness. And I would say that that has actually been one of the most satisfying piece of being in the legislature, is that I can help when ideas come to me, being able to say yes, and then working through the process so we can get a resolution to honor that. And I will say that actually I had the resolution with the emblem on it, asked for a couple of extra copies because I had several legislators that reached out to me and shared their own story about their own family members with profound autism.
In its own way, that has to be more satisfying than passing a bill. That's an HR that seems to be, it would touch you inside more than HB.
Yes, I would say that's very true. And I would also say that until I got in the legislature, I didn't realize that this was something that was possible, The other one I wanted to share is about the Chinese Exclusion Act. That was a resolution where for several years now in Seattle, we've done a commemoration, remembrance of the Chinese Exclusion Act, where we start in the Chinatown International District. We have a little bit of a rally, and then we march down to the waterfront where the very first Chinatown was before they were forced to relocate to other farther away from the waterfront. But actually, it was over 100 years ago where the Chinese were literally pushed out of Seattle and Tacoma, and partly because there was a belief that the Chinese were a threat to jobs, and so they were not welcome in the Pacific Northwest. So it was important to me to make sure that we had a resolution that gave awareness to the fact that the Chinese Exclusion Act existed over 100 years ago, and that when we talk about so many of the things that have happened in our history, the way that we hopefully don't repeat it is by remembering what's happened in the past, and not just somewhere else in the United States, but right here in Seattle and Tacoma.
I had no idea until today when I was doing some research on that particular House resolution that there was the Tacoma riot of 1885 and the Seattle riot of the following year, in which apparently many people from China were killed. I knew nothing about this.
Yeah, there was violence. They were forced out of their homes. And in Tacoma, their houses were literally burned down. That's why Seattle does still have a Chinatown. Tacoma doesn't have one, because they were literally forced out of town and those buildings burned to the ground. Part of our history.
Yeah, not the best part.
Hopefully we are able to learn and share that history so that, again, it doesn't happen again.
I hope so. You mentioned earlier, and I know, that you immigrated to the United States as a child from Hong Kong. There are now at least 4 immigrants in the House Democratic Caucus, which I think is notable in itself. That's, 7.5% of the entire caucus. We have members who immigrated here from Hong Kong, yourself, Vietnam, the Philippines, and South Korea. It's just pretty amazing to me, and it is interesting and cool. Y'all could have like an immigrant caucus.
You know, we do have a Members of Color caucus. We do not currently have an Asian caucus. There is a Black caucus. There's a Latino caucus. And perhaps as we move along, that might be a conversation for us, because now I believe there are 8-9 API that's in the Democratic caucus. And part of it, I do think, is having that conversation around what would a caucus look like for the API? What are some topics that we can talk about? Certainly, we have a lot of shared history. I would say that we have a lot of shared history from our members of color, right? How do we unite around oppression, equity, finding ways to make sure that we don't leave anybody behind, that as we have a continued economic development and growth and prosperity in Washington State, it is incumbent on all of us to make sure that we're not leaving anyone behind. And we know that as immigrants, and my seatmate, Rep. Tai, is a refugee, that it can be a really hard place to find your pathway to careers and success and a sense of belonging. And at the end of the day, isn't that what we all want, is to feel like we can be ourselves and to belong? And I say that because I still remember when I was in middle school, I stopped bringing my food to school because Chinese food can look a little odd, smell a little funny, and I don't want that for anybody. Back then, I think that it was all about assimilation, be as American as possible, almost lose your very cultural identity. And I think about the fact that it was more of the melting pot of the United States. And now I really think about it more as stir fry. That if you think about stir fry, you're really, you want the richness of all of the flavors in your stir fry instead of the idea that you put everything into a big pot and you stir it all together to the point where you can't tell what's actually in it.
That is a beautiful metaphor. And at this point, we've been talking for a half an hour. I normally would say, Representative Zahn, how would you like to end this interview? I can't think of a better way, really, than to kind of segue towards the end now. I will give you a chance, however, if there's anything you want to add, to do so.
I will add one thing. And I would say for me, it is this. It is a very tough session. What I have been told repeatedly in the just over 2 months that I've been down here since I started on day 10 is how challenging of a year this is, of having to make really tough decisions in appropriations around what are the budget cuts in order to bring an operating budget that doesn't harm as many people and yet is thoughtful about making sure that people are being served, and the tough discussion around revenues. With that said, I think for me, I'm always grounded by those values of when we come together in collaboration, we can solve anything. And that at the end of the day, we have to have hope. We have to talk about hope and follow it up with action about how we are thoughtful and come together to solve this collective problem we have around the budget. And it's not going to be easy. We've heard that the House, the Senate, and the governor have slightly different thoughts about what the strategies might be and what the outcome might look like. For me, I stay grounded every day in the hope that we will get there together.
I'm glad you didn't want to quit talking 2 minutes ago. Thank you, Representative Janice Zahn from the 41st Legislative District. This has been a terrific conversation. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
It's been totally my pleasure. I don't know about you, but I thought that was pretty good stuff. Remember that name, Janice Zahn. And remember this one too, Adam Birnbaum. Representative Birnbaum is the guest on the next Capital Ideas, and that episode will round out our 10 podcasts with the 10 new Democratic members of the State House in the class of 2025. If you're a subscriber to our podcast, thank you. If not, you can change that by going to the House Democratic Caucus website and clicking on the media button, then Capital Ideas, or you can find us on your favorite podcast site. I hope you will, because what we talk about here is your state government. And what happens here matters. I'm Dan Frizzell for the Washington State House Democrats, putting people first since 1889 when the first jukebox made its debut in a San Francisco saloon. The selections were limited. Thanks for your time.